listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. Tonight we have Oriel and Carlos Jimenez, the producer duo for a new film that comes out April 1st called Burn. How are you both?
Great. How are you?
Woo-hoo! We made this happen. I'm so excited. So First of all, I want to ask, you both met in the Marines. Individually, tell me how you guys met, what made you want to join the Marines, because just the fact that you guys are filmmakers and producers and creators and you came from the Marines, I have to tell you, that is a first for any of my guests. So it's such an ingenious way to become creators, and I just want to know more about that. So tell me how you got into the Marines, what it took to get in, and what made you go in, and then how you met.
You want to go first?
Aurel, you go first. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, ladies first.
Okay. So graduating after high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do in college. So instead of wasting my time, I was like, why not go shoot guns and jump out of planes and run around and stay physically fit? So I went through the different toughest, the strongest, the strong-minded in their minds, and that's what I wanted to do. So I went and joined the Marine Corps.
And did you have family that were in it before, or was this totally blind? You just went, I'm going to go do this.
It was kind of totally blind. I do have on my stepdad's side, their whole family's Air Force, but it wasn't really like, it didn't give me direction to kind of do that. It was just kind of like, I'm not going to waste 4 years and a lot of money going to school, not knowing what I really wanted to do.
Right.
And so I figured it would be a strong choice.
That is a super strong choice. First of all, I don't know what to do. I'm going to get yelled at for a little bit and run laps and just make sure I get my shit together, because that is one way to get it done for sure. So I applaud that. Carlos, what about you?
I'm not like Oriel. I actually didn't even know what I wanted to do. And this guy showed up at my door and he had this uniform on. And to be honest, at the time, I thought he was a policeman, and he wanted it. I was like, who's this guy?
You're like, what'd I do?
So I grew up in Chicago, my mom knew I was kind of misguided a little bit, needed a little bit of direction, a little bit of structure. So she allowed this Marine Corps recruiter in, and again, like I said, I thought he was a policeman, but then my mom said it'd be really good for me to go, so I went and stuff like that, and it took me about a year to get in because I still didn't want to go, but it's actually the best thing I ever did in my life. If it wasn't for the Marine Corps, I wouldn't be a filmmaker, so.
You wouldn't have met me.
And I wouldn't have met my wife, of course, but we're going to get to the part where we met, right? once I joined, it was pretty much a whirlwind, because a lot of gang violence, they pretty much taught me how to.
Well, I lost you for a second. Say it one more time. You said you were in Chicago, and then the Marines showed up, and then your mom said you need to go, and then I lost you.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I went because I needed to get out of the hood. The hood was not a good spot for me.
Were you in the south side of Chicago?
West side of Chicago, which they never talk about very much. It's pretty ironic because the south side or north side are pretty much the largest sides of the city. But on the west side, Latin neighborhoods and stuff like that, we never, ever get headlines, which is funny, which is really weird. But, that's where I grew up, I needed a little bit of direction. Again, the Marine Corps provided that. And again, because of them, I became a filmmaker.
I was just saying, that's amazing. Go on.
So what they did, like, California, and I worked part-time at a movie theater in Oceanside. And I watched lots of movies there, and it provided an escape from the Marine Corps. Because again, at first I didn't like it. I didn't like the structure. I was like this wild Bronco, but the movies provided an escape for me. I was able to kind of sit there for an hour and a half, 2 hours or what have you, and just put myself in someone else's shoes and just imagine and just be in fantasy land for that long. And I said, this is something I want to do. You know, this is who I am. You know, I want to tell stories. There's a lot of things I want to do. So yeah, that's the reason that, you know, they introduced me to Saving Private Ryan, which is the first war movie I ever watched, because again, being naive, I thought war movies were stupid. You know, but when I saw that,
you're in the Marines.
I know. Again, naive. And when I saw Saving Private Ryan, I was like, oh my God, this is, I felt World War II. I felt what those people went through, you know, and I wanted to kind of convey that in stories. You know, I want people to feel how I felt in that theater. So, yeah, you know.
And then how'd you two meet? Were you in the same kind of like, I don't even know. Is it that do you call it the same core? What is the group that you're in?
Yeah, we wound up being stationed together at the same like battalion, and we met each other. We were friends for quite some time. And then, you know, we just started dating and stuff. And, you know, Carlos, we decided that we were going to leave California and move to Chicago and go to college there. So we went to Columbia College Chicago. I studied marketing. Carlos studied film. And, you know, we've been together 23 years.
That's amazing. And you know what? That's like did you have an idea? Like, you study marketing, I'll study film, we'll be a powerhouse duo. How did you kind of like?
Well, it's funny because like at the time, you know, there was no internet. This is 1999. You know, so I wanted to study film, and the thing is, like, I was studying, you know, looking up these schools, and Columbia kind of stuck out to me. And I told Ariel, I said, you know, I think I want to do this whole film thing. I think it might be kind of cool. And Ariel started going to the brochure. You know, I remember we're in our little apartment over in Fallbrook, and she's like looking through it. And she's like, oh my God, this marketing thing feels good for me. It felt for her like it was a perfect fit, you know, and, that's when we said, okay, sure, let's go back to Chicago and do this. And we did, you know.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty fun, actually.
And then tell me, like, you know, you're both in completely different wings of school. Because yeah. We were in completely different universes. So how did you kind of, like, you know, find a parallel in that, or kind of have it nurture your relationship or connection together? Because those are two different mindsets. One's creative, one's like business minded. You're thinking about statistics and you know, kind of showcasing things. So tell me how those complemented each other, and then also how they differ from each other.
Well, I think that, I mean, it was different. I knew he wanted to study film, and marketing is kind of I'm more logistics. I'm more like a numbers person. You know, contracts and stuff like that. I worked at a law firm the whole time while I was going to college and stuff. And so, you know, that was kind of like my realm. And he was more of like that creative process. So it kind of just worked. Like, we weren't stepping on each other's shoes at all, you know? And I mean, it just wound up working out. And then how I dropped into film is because of the housing market crash in 2008 that happened.
Right, all the Fannie Mae stuff, right?
All the Fannie Mae stuff. Everything just crashed, and all of a sudden, there was no advertising budgets at all. No corporations had any money. Everybody went to guerrilla marketing. You know, nobody wanted to spend anything. They were just like paying promo models to come out and kind of showcase their stuff. And so it was like, okay, I'm a freelancer here doing, I'm a consultant in marketing. And it was like, okay, what the hell am I going to do? So I started jumping on doing a little bit of stuff in film, and then voila, I'm a film producer.
That's right. Well, I mean, it's kind of like you have the business acumen, you know, kind of figure out how to market something and promote something, really. And then also do the numbers. And that's really what produces. You were, I assume you're working on digital and film, or did you just do one or the other?
No, I started, well, actually, it was film school. You know, I did 16 millimeter, 35 millimeter film, and that's what I did. It was film, you know, and that's where my foundation's at. So, it was such a different time then, you know, and now in hindsight, I look at it like, wow, we used to have conversations about digital taking over, and we're like, digital's never going to take over. It's never going to have the resolution. It's never going to have, you know, it's never going to look as good. You know, film is better. And even to this day, I mean, I shot film 2 years ago and I've been shooting digital. And oh my God, the things we can do with digital nowadays, you know, is amazing. Right. You know, it's provided a tool to a lot of independent filmmakers now. You can shoot with your phone. You know, just recently we also actually have a film out in the film festivals right now that was shot on a phone, you know, wow. And again, I've shot everywhere from 35 millimeter to a phone. And honestly, it's all in the expression, you know, it depends on the story and stuff and what you're trying to express and what you, and also what you're allowed to have as tools, you know? So, yeah, I mean, again, you know, I think the foundation I got at Columbia was very imperative, because when I get on set, it's like I have this very fundamental base, you know, this foundation that I have and stuff like that. And I see very clearly how things need to get done. You block, you light, you rehearse, you tweak, you shoot, and you keep doing that process. It's just it's a process that I try to explain to every director I work with. And Patrick Lazzara, you know, understood that process, you know, yeah. And just really, you know, working with him was like, you know, it was like awesome, because he's very clear about what he wants. And the thing is, about being a cinematographer is to find a director that's clear about their vision, you know. And again, I'm not saying to some directors that, oh, if you don't have your vision, you can't shoot. That's not true. It's my job as a DP to get their vision out of their head and kind of like lay it out. You know, I know the technical stuff. If I have a director that can do that, great. If I don't, no problem. But it's my job to get that vision out. But Patrick is like so passionate about crime stories, thrillers, and he's just always about these mob boss stories, and he just loves these things. I mean, and it's such a breath of fresh air too, because it's got a little bit of like retroactive kind of things going on, a little bit of you know, nostalgia, if you say, you know, Rocky, you know, Cobra, like. All these great films, and then, you know, again, he's just so passionate about his stories, and, you know, I like working with a guy, you know, there's an honesty there, there's a trust, you know, so.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, it's one work. I find, you know, you want to just work with people that you enjoy being around, that are wanting to be in the moment, to create and, you know, make it a positive thing. And that's what gets the movies finished. You know, I've been working on this animated project, and we've been going to film festivals and whatnot. And it's like, and all these film festivals, everybody says the reward is making the film and getting it finished. And the fact that you guys even did that is huge, because most people don't even get to that point. There's so many roadblocks, and film is like such an expensive medium. And it's also, you have to be highly organized. It just, you can't waste time. That's just the way it is. There's so many people involved. So tell me a little bit how you met Patrick, and then how the process of when you shot Burn, how that came together, and what were the steps that you took before you kind of went into pre-production or, you know, starting the film.
You start this, Carlos.
Yeah. I was working on a low budget zombie movie. It was my first feature in LA. I wanted to do it. It was really low budget. You know, we were shooting on DSLRs when they were kind of hot at the time. And we were in this little cabin out in Anza, California. And it was interesting because the set was the house that we were sleeping in. So we, you know, in the mornings we dressed the set, we light the set, we rehearse, we shoot it and stuff like that. And then at night we'd go to bed. And then it reversed, you know, because we had to shoot night stuff, and, you know, and then we'd shoot all night. And then, you know, and in the morning we'd be sleeping in the set. But anyway, so Patrick was, you know, he saw my process on set, you know, again, the set was kind of a little bit, I wouldn't say disorganized, but there was not like
guerrilla style. It's guerrilla.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, it's hard, you know, it's hard. And I tried to like, you know, instill positive energy. I always tell him, just stay within the frame, and I go, and it will be all right. You know, and Patrick really, you know, he enjoyed what we were doing. And then I brought Ariel. I called Ariel, I said, hey, babe, I'm getting my ass kicked out here. I go, I need you to come out here and kind of organize us and stuff like that, and just get us going and flowing and stuff like that. And she came out. She provided a much needed, you know, energy and boost that we needed.
You can say whip cracker, because she was
in shape. Hey guys, fucking sisters. We gotta go and shoot. Da, 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 you know, and then she provided food because we didn't have any food on set. You know, it was like it was a nightmare. But anyway, so Patrick was like, "Hey, dude, you're shooting my movie," and I was just like, "Okay." I was like, "Sure." And at the time, the movie was called "Do Not Disturb." You know, and it was this story about, I was, you know, at the time he pitched to me, it was like, hey, it's this story about this this hitman that gets a call about his brother, and his brother's in trouble because he killed the crime lord's wife, you know. And I was like, oh, that sounds really interesting. And so we kind of sat down, discussed the film, and he sent over the script, and I was like, okay, this sounds pretty doable, because you know, I'm thinking budget, I'm thinking logistics, I'm thinking technical stuff like that. And he's just, hey, listen, all we're going to do is build a motel set. We're going to, you know, tell the story inside the motel set, and we're going to do it in flashbacks. And every time we go to those flashbacks, you know, it'll propel the story forward. So it's still in a fractured storyline. I said, okay, sure, let's do it. You know, and in 2014, we were able to kind of like put together a two and a half week shoot over in Orange County, and we found a studio there, which is no longer there anymore, unfortunately, but they were very helpful to us. They provided a space for us to shoot, lighting and grip equipment, camera equipment. And
we built three sets, like, yes. Crazy.
we built the motel set there, which is the primary set. Mm-hmm. We built the crime lord's office. And
wait, how long did that take? That had to take weeks just to make it. Months.
Our production designer Kevin Williams was amazing. I mean, he put together a few plots, overheads, color palettes, and we kind of discussed over meetings over the first few months what the place was going to look like. And he just went to work. The guy did not stop. He was like a one man wrecking band. Wow. he brought in over a couple of carpenters to kind of help out build the set. But when he finished, man, I mean, it was spot on in terms of like what we were, you know, seeing in the motel room, because we were contemplating, should we go shoot at a real motel room? Could we, you know, get in there and really, you know, get this done?
But the cost efficiency too.
I was about to ask that. Yeah.
No,
it would have been insane, especially in Los Angeles. Like, it, you know, you're just killing yourself with your budget on locations when we needed to spend money on so many other things.
Right.
How
did you even justify or like figure out that it was going to cost that much less to build a motel set or several?
Well, it's because of the time. Because the thing is, like, you know, motel rooms, in order for us to find a perfect motel room, as I was always telling Patrick, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to get the right camera angle there. You know, I don't know if I'm able to fit the camera. We need to move walls. You know, we need to get depth, you know, and it's just like, it made more sense, because if we did a live motel room, we were going to have another motel room next to us to have a kind of a production office and then shoot for X amount of weeks there. And it would have been longer because we wouldn't have any control. And that the whole thing about filmmaking is that, you know, everybody in filmmaking that's at their craft is a control freak at some point. You know, they control the art, the camera, the lighting, the acting, whatever it is, you know, and it just kind of, it made total sense for us to have that control, mm-hmm. because independent filmmakers, you don't have the luxury to, you know, file for permits and block off streets and tell people to be quiet. And this space made sense because there was nobody going to make noise.
Yeah.
There was nobody going to tell us to go anywhere. And the sound, you know, sounds so critical. So it made sense budgetary wise, creative wise, you know, and we did it. But the thing is, we weren't done at 2014 when we did those 2.5 weeks there.
Yeah.
Yeah. What we didn't realize was the film was going to take another 6 years to finish.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
It is, because the thing is, you know, Ariel and I and Patrick, we're always discussing to get some sort of funding for the film, and the funding primarily at the first year of it, we were lucky to get an Indiegogo campaign going, and we were able to get about $15,000 to start, and then we ended up spending about another $20,000 there, and then at that point, you know, we're like, okay, we have to stop because everything, all of the rest of the funding was coming from our own pockets.
Yeah.
So at that point, it was like, after that, it was like favors. You know, I knew a lot of people in the business with cameras and lighting and grip. I, you know, at the time, and I still am, Local 728, so I'm a member of the union there. So I was able to pull off some favors. Patrick was able to get the actors together and kind of you know, they donated some of their time. We were able to pay some of them when we could, you know, and then we were shooting at our house, like my house, Patrick's house. And there was a critical piece there too, was the restaurant. And the restaurant is a downtown location, which is impossible to close. And Patrick is a manager there now, but at the time he didn't have the pull to kind of go, hey, listen, we need to shut down this place for a couple days,
wow,
you know, or 3 days or whatever it was. I don't remember anymore, but to get, you know, and shoot there at night, you know, to get the actors, you know, in there and stuff like that. So we had to cheat the place during the day, black out everything, you know, and light it and shoot. And it was more towards the end of the shoot we were able to get that location, but it was such a critical piece. But I'm glad we things happened the way they did, because now that's part of the, in my opinion, some of the best looking stuff in the film. Because
and the whole thing is also is that we slowed it down. We were like, okay, we could either bang the rest of the movie out very quickly, done very cheaply, and it would look not as good as it does, you know, or right, slow it down, take our time, and then take these weekends to shoot this section, this section, this section, you know, and this way self-funding it made it a little bit more bearable. Yeah. And, you know, and then this way we got to put together our project, and our movie is put together really nicely. It's not like, oh shit. Oh, sorry. It's not.
Yeah, I don't want to.
It's not like we
swore like 10 minutes ago.
I don't know, because we've been swearing on this whole thing. I mean, what are you talking about?
Of course. I swear like a sailor. So it's like, if this is my show, it's like, I gotta have that. It's gotta be there. It's like, hey, listen, this is just gonna have to be part of the thing. So go ahead.
Yeah. So we just, you know, piecing it all together and just like slowing it down. And a lot of filmmakers tend to do that, where it's like, okay, well, let's just cut this so we can get this done. And we were like, nope, we're sticking to the script. We're going to make sure that this body of work is going to be a really good calling card for us. And it's right, going to be something that we're going to be proud of, you know, even in 10, 15, 20 years, we're not going to be like, oh yeah, my first movie that I made was a piece of shit, you know?
Right.
And so it's, yeah. And I mean, that makes me proud.
I got to ask you a relationship question, because you guys are creating this movie. Mm-hmm. You're going through the trenches of making a movie and doing it guerrilla style on a limited budget.
Right.
And you're also married. Right. How did you take the producer hat off, yeah, and the husband and wife hat back on? Because I'm sure there were many dinners or date nights. Right. We're talking about the movie because it's on your mind, and I know that from also creating albums and just going through obstacles. So how did you deal with that and make that work? Because that's amazing in and of itself.
Yeah, I think, you know, what's really good is being that I'm on the production side. I mean, yes, I am behind the monitor, and I am, you know, giving my input and making decisions on if we need to do another take or this looks really good. You know, and it's a collaborative effort between Carlos, myself, and Patrick. But yeah, I mean, it's being that I'm separated from the road, we just maintain a very professional relationship when we're working. And then when we're at home, I mean, we have a daughter, you know, we raised a family while we were making this movie.
Wow.
So it's just kind of like, you know, it's like, okay, turn it off, turn it on, compartmentalize kind of is what you have to do.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. And then how did you keep it together? You said the whole movie in its span took about 7 years to make. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So started principal photography in 2014. But I mean, originally conception was in 2011. That's a whole other story in itself, because Patrick was going through cancer when he actually wrote the film.
Yeah, I read that. I read that in the bio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he wrote this in like 3 days, right?
He's a beast, dude. The guy's a beast. I mean, he just when he says, "Hey, I'm gonna write this," I go, "Sure," and boom, like he comes out with this draft, and you're like,
"He's
a beast," you know. So, but yeah, it took a while to get that done. But it's like, in order for us to kind of keep pace of things, we just kind of. Thank God for our editor, Eugene Gordon, you know, who was a college buddy of mine. He just kind of like kept pace and stuff like that, and kept us kind of like, hey, you know, we need this to fit, because it's a puzzle, you know, you're fitting all the pieces into the puzzle and stuff like that. And it was kind of fun too, because you're just kind of like, okay, X, these, you know, these images are getting done, you know, but you know, Gene kept us organized in terms of like, okay, we got the scene here, we're done, and you know, you need to get these pieces here, and some of these pieces we would quote unquote steal them at some other location and stuff like that, and cheat them and stuff. But yeah, if it wasn't for Gene, we wouldn't have had an edit as coherent as it is, you know, because again, it's a team effort. You got to have people on you that are willing to all better good. I mean, it sounds cliche, you know, but it does take a village, you know, to get it done.
So how many total days of shooting in that span? Like, did you do 10 days of shooting in year one and then by year six, or are you also including the editing time for the duration of the film?
Oh, yeah, 10 years would be the whole film being complete,
wow.
Right? Yeah.
No, but the shooting days, I would say like photography days, if we had a schedule and had like, you know, a call sheet from, you know, it would be like day one of like 35, I would say, if we had 35 shooting days, because, you know, the days, you know, cost us about 6,000 to 7,000, which is nothing, obviously, right. Some big Hollywood budget is nothing, but $6,000 to $8,000 out of our own pockets, you know, especially when you have a family.
You're living
living in LA, you know, it's not.
It's like big movies or podcasts, you know.
Yeah, totally.
When you're funding it yourself, it's a different thing.
Yeah, it's not costly.
Same thing when I fund my records, and it's like you're using every second because you're paying for it. It's not like the people that are funded by a label or an independent movie house. I mean, you know, a commercial movie house that's funding your film. So you savor the time. 35 days is a lot. Yes. And then how far into it did you realize, okay, we have half the movie, we still have another half to shoot?
That was probably in 2015 that we realized we had half the movie, because again, half the movie was shot in that studio over in Orange County. And then we decided to go do the weekend shoots. That's what ended up happening, is we started doing weekend shoots to knock out specific scenes. You know, there'd be a scene of him talking with Laurel, you know, we'd be there for a weekend. There'd be a scene, a rest scene. That'd be 2 weekends, 4 shooting days. You know, there'd be a scene in the desert. The desert scene was a nightmare because what happened was we shot the initial desert scene, but because we shot it in 2012, by the time we got up to principal photography in 2014, one of our main actors who played Seth had moved to Singapore. So at that point, we had to recast the role. Wow. So we had to reshoot that thing again. And again, I'm just going off of memory right now, but I'm gonna say that was about 3 shooting days in the desert. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna tell you right now, shooting in the desert is not easy.
No, it's not.
You can't even imagine.
In the middle of nowhere, you got all those elements against you: wind,
rain,
you know,
thunder.
Rain,
right?
You know, and then there were sound issues. It was
military planes,
you know, and then getting drone shots. The stuff takes time. You know, if you're going to make it look right, it's going to take a little bit of time. You know, and obviously you just press because your money like better while you're looking at it. You're like, oh my gosh! But you know, we kind of stood pace. You know, trying to make that whole thing happen. Like,
well, at least you shot it on digital. Like, I always think of Star Wars.
Oh, God.
You're shooting it on film in the desert. Yeah. Nothing works. Everything kind of Bluetooth smithereens. They didn't think they had anything. And then it became this epic movie that we all know and love now. You know, so I commend you for even taking the chance to go to the desert and shoot. Let's play the trailer. We're going to play the trailer right now so we can get an idea and show our viewers what this movie's about. And then I've got some more questions for you guys.
Okay.
Okay, awesome.
What do you do besides drive?
That's between you and your husband. I'm not saying a word.
Because you know this can get us killed.
I gotta be out of my mind.
Just shut up.
Maximilian.
Got something that's gonna test your mettle. It's about your brother. He did it this time.
Can you hand me a match?
Christ.
Mr. P wants him put down, period.
You got a couple of days.
He's my brother.
I want to show you something. That's your brother. And my wife.
You want me to kill my own brother?
That's not going to be a problem, is it, Maximilian?
Where's he at?
Good answer.
Relax, I'm here to help.
How'd you know I was here?
We got to get you out of town as
soon as the sun drops, we're out of here.
I'm as good as dead, aren't I?
Yeah, he'll be coming.
Who else is coming for me?
Come here.
Really happen like that?
I think
you love it. Trust me, right now.
I'll tell if you don't.
What do you plan on doing with that gun? Cha-cha-cha. You know I could kill you for being so stupid.
He knows. He's always known.
If you kill me, they'll just send somebody else, and they'll keep coming till you're dead.
That was awesome. That looks so good. It looks so clean. So nice. Good.
Yeah.
Very, very nice. I want to ask you real quick, Carlos. So what did you shoot this on? Did you get a Red? Did you use a Canon?
Oh, my God. That's a very loaded question because, how about this? Well, when we were in Orange County, we shot on the Red Epic camera time with Cook Lens on. We didn't have the capability to kind of get those that camera package again. So we started shooting on Alexa. I shot on the Mira. I shot on the Canon C300 Mark II, Mark I. I shot on a DJI Inspiron. I shot on a Blackmagic BMC Pro when it came out. So as the years were going on, you know, it was like these new technologies were coming out. And I look at Burn in retrospect, and I'm like, you know, I shot in a whole lot of cameras, and I learned a lot of cameras, you know, and it's funny because, like, you know, you look at the flashbacks and they have a specific look to them now,
right?
Because of it, you know, you shot them with different cameras, so you have a different feel. But thank God we shot the motel stuff all with the same camera, mm-hmm. and the stuff that was outside was different, you know, but it was just, you know, trying to make them all feel the same was, you know, I intuitively just kind of, you know, my background is really good with lighting. You know, I have a very good, you know, background with lighting. So I just made sure that was, you know, the lighting was kind of the same, or if it was in a scene that was like, you know, took place, you know, X amount of months ago, I try to make it look a little bit, you know, more, you know, retro and stuff like that. But it was a lot of cameras that we shot with, you know.
And luckily we had so many rental houses that were so gracious to us. Yeah. That they were letting us, you know, for really, really cheap prices, we got really, really high quality lenses. So we kind of, you know, that kind of made up for stuff like that too.
Yeah. Ariel working at the camera house was pretty awesome.
Green Images. They hooked us up.
Yeah, Green Images and the camera division. Yeah, well, thank
you. Those are like the unsung heroes of something. They also want to see you coming back and making more movies and using them. But, you know, it's all those little things, like, you know, more of the industry needs to realize everybody needs each other, whether it's like you're on the other side of the camera or you're behind the scenes doing all the marketing and all that stuff. Then the camera rental houses, then it's set design. It's everything is one part of the puzzle. So it's like what's so amazing is when you finish it and when you have a trailer that looks like this, did you kind of edit the trailer first and then keep hashing away at the movie, or did you kind of find both like were kind of in parallel with each other?
I actually, you know, because, you know, Gene is a full-time editor, so I you know, he was doing us a favor by, you know, editing for us, and we gave him like he actually donated his time, you know, and so I was kind of some team editors. And then I ended up cutting another one more trailer, which is the old one that was got pulled up, you know, just recently. But this trailer you just saw, we were able to go to this trailer editor named Lawrence Cohen, who hooked up our trailer and just brought it to life with music and fast cuts and kind of had a different eye on it. Because we saw, it's like, you know, when you're editing a movie throughout the years, it just becomes numb almost at some point. You just don't see.
You don't have fresh eyes.
Yeah, we had such fresh eyes, and Lawrence was able to kind of bring a voice to the trailer, and we've rid with that trailer. I was like, oh my God, when he cut it, it was like almost like, oh dude, that's fantastic. I'm like, you know, and he did a kick-ass job on it, you know. So.
Yeah, and to answer your question also, yes, the movie was complete before the trailer was made.
Yes.
Oh, wow. It's usually the opposite. Yeah. Usually he's like trying to shuffle to get the editing done, and, you know, the trailer is like the sneak peek. You know, there's an art to both. I think there's an art to making films. I'm such a huge movie buff, and I love trailers because it's like you really can see, especially when you go back. Like, I love that there are old trailers of movies you love that you can see, oh, this is a movie that I love now, but this was the trailer, and you either may have missed it or you still love it just as much. And then you also see, like, there are these spoofs. I know you guys have seen these. Like, they do, like, The Shining as a romantic comedy, but it's a trailer. Right. You really see that there's an art in the trailer because you can make a movie look so different just by the trailer. But what it comes down to is how the movie works, how the movie kind of, you know, feels, and is there movement? How did you both feel as a producer duo? Oriel, I'm going to ask you first. Okay. When you watch that first cut, when you find that, how would that be exciting? Because you're finally seeing the finished piece after living with this movie. So I want both of your perspectives as to what that was like when you finally saw it for the first time.
No, it was awesome. I was like, I can't believe we actually did this. And it's interesting that you're asking me this because I was sending this movie to another filmmaker that I'm working with so he can look at it the other day. And I just started watching the movie and I was like, wow, I can't believe we're in this location. I can't believe we built these sets and it looks so real. I can't believe, you know, we were shooting in my house. So yeah, no, seeing it all come together, and it was really funny because even at our screening, some of our actors and some other people were like, wow, this looks like a real movie.
You're like, yeah, duh.
Yeah, you see? We weren't making anything less than that, but the surprise that people expect of independent film is, and you know, for us to be on the top tier of what an independent film should look like makes me very happy.
That's awesome. What about you, Carlos? What was that feeling? I know you were very close to it, so when you finally saw it, and I'm sure you still look at it and you're like, man, I could have edited this or whatever it is. You know, there's always little tweaks we always see with something finished that we still feel we can make it better. But how did you feel when you knew it was done, or when you saw that first final cut?
I was relieved. And I say that because again, I cut an initial trailer, you know, because, you know, one of my favorite filmmakers is Robert Rodriguez. And when I was going to film school, you know, he was, the quintessential guy that kind of like brought independent filmmaking to the stage. You know, he did everything himself. You know, he cut, he wrote, he shot, he directed. And I was like, oh, fuck it. I'm going to go ahead and cut this trailer. I'm going to show like this type of stuff. I just like, felt just kind of more moody and slow. And it just, it didn't have the perspective that I was trying to look for. I didn't even know what I was looking for. I'm just trying to, you know, it's like, but when Lawrence cut it, it was like, and I saw it, I was like, oh, you know, trailer editing is a specialty. It's something that, you know, that people that do this for a living, they have a certain skill set that I will not be able to do because they just have a different perspective, I think, you know. And my perspective, I think because I'm so attached to it, you know, I see I'm the cinematographer, so I want to make sure the best shots are on there. But you know what? That's not the case. You know, the case is the story needs to be told, and how can you hook people? And I don't have that. Ariel has the hook, you know, and then Lawrence has the perspective, and then, you know, and for them to kind of combine that together. When I saw it, I was like, man, that's, I feel real different. Seeing the images for so long, you're just kind of numb to them, you know, and there's no energy, you know. And again, his fresh eyes kind of brought a lot of energy to it, and I was really happy he did that.
That's amazing. Now, this movie's coming out April 1st, correct?
Yes.
All right, so now you're marketing this independent movie. Tell me what that process is like, because that is a whole, that's like shooting the movie all over again just to promote it and get eyes to it, you know. So what's your process, or how do you get people to be enticed, you know, to see the movie?
Well, I mean, I guess we could say that distribution was a big thing. So once we hooked up with the distributor, we do have our press person, who's Ryan Levy.
He's the best, by the way.
He is.
Let me tell you, I've been doing this show for maybe 10 years now. Yeah. And yeah, something like that. And he's one of my favorite PR people. He always gives me excellent guests.
Good.
And it's like I built this vehicle to just make it for creators, and he's giving me great creators like yourselves.
That's awesome.
I can't speak enough great words about him. He's just awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, you know, a little bit of social media and a little bit of press and, you know, word of mouth. We have a lot of people that have been with us since the beginning, you know, contributors that, you know, started with our Indiegogo campaign, just believers that they knew the team that we have between Patrick, myself, and Carlos, that we're all talented and we make this like organized, really organized unit. And, you know, no one really had a doubt that we could actually get this done, even though it took us a little bit longer and a little bit of self-funding.
Well, you know, it's so funny. I tell people this all the time. I go through this with making albums. When anybody ever asks me, oh, when's the album going to be done? It's like, you don't tell the album when it's going to get done. The album tells you when it's going to get done, because that's how it works. And it's like, you'll know when it gets there. And that's it. Because anytime I put a timetable on anything music related, it's always 30% more on the budget and the time, because it takes more, because you know what's possible and you know what it takes to get there. And it's like, we want to make it great, you know? So I love that. But yeah, who cares if it takes 10 years?
Yeah.
You look at it and you're like, the fact that you guys are proud of it the way you are, that says it all. That makes anybody who is watching this, you know, want to watch a movie, because it's easy to dissect something that you make. It's just the instinct.
Yeah.
As humans, we just want to pick things apart. So when you can sit and go, voice that not many of us, you know, give each other, you know. So I'm excited to see this movie just based on the trailer and what you went through. Yeah. I gotta ask both of you, what were some of the biggest obstacles? And I know you had many, because you already told us some. What were some of the biggest obstacles you went through making this movie?
Well, I can say on my end, this was the very first film. Like, you know, I was on that other low budget horror movie as like an associate producer, because I stepped in to like help out basically. But this was the very first film that I actually was a real producer on, because it was like taking something, a project, a script, and now having to build it from the ground all the way up, you know? So it was trials and tribulations of, you know, booking gear, being the weather elements, being in the desert, having tents fly away that we rented. I think that was pretty much like just little things like that. Just being able to, you know, make sure that people are coming back. Now it's like a year later, we had actors move away. That was kind of like a little stress for all of us. So, but for me in production, that's pretty much what it was for me. Yeah.
Just good answers, and those sound crazy.
Yeah.
What about you, Carlos?
Finishing the film, you know, there was a time where I was just like, we're never going to finish this movie. You know, it's like, you know, I remember reading all these stories about people taking years to make a film. I'm just like, and then when we were going through it, there was a point where it was just like, you know, year six. And I'm just like, dude, this movie's never going to get done. This isn't going to sit on the shelf, you know. It's like you're in the hole. And you know, there's no end, deflates you. You know, you start questioning yourself. You start questioning your, you know, your validity, if you're even belong. You know, it's like all these things come in your head. You know, are you doing the things you're supposed to be doing, you know? But Patrick, man, he just kept that train going, man. Like, I was like, you know, sometimes I'm just like, dude, I don't want to fucking do this anymore. It's not going to work. You know, I mean, cause we were like 3/4 done, and I'm just like, dude, we still got to get this. So I try to stay positive, and I just like maintaining the energy, the endurance throughout that time was tough for me. And then after when it was done, the biggest thing for me was finding a distributor. Like, how do you find one? Like, how do you go? You hear all these horror stories. Like, How do you find a distributor? I cannot see it. You know, I'm a very, you know, I got to see things, you know, how do you, what's the step-by-step process? Do you, so you get a producer rep, you know, and the producer rep goes find a distributor. And it's like, when you meet these distributors, are they going to have the common goal with you? And it's like all new waters for me, because being a creative, you know, I didn't want to be a producer. I wanted to shoot, you know, but it just fell into my lap. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take this head on. I'm going to do it. But again, the toughest part of it was finishing the film and getting out to distribution. And it's funny now, because I talked to some of my producer friends that are real producers and stuff, because I'm not a real producer. Ariel is a real producer, you know, and they just, you know, they pat me in the back, go, bro, you finished the film. You did it, you know, and it's
the finish line.
And again, that's the tough thing. It's to finish a film. It's so tough. It's like everyone says it. It's tough. And until you go through it, you kind of go, okay, I see where you're going. And now we've learned so much, and we're really excited, because Still Burning and Burn It Down is part 2 and 3 of Burn. It's already been written. And this time around, Los Productions and Standing Outcome Films are not going to take 10 years to get this film done.
Right.
We're going to get this done right this time, because we're going to have distribution up front. We're going to have talent up front. We're going to have funds in place up front. And we'll knock anything out in a way shorter time than we did with these films. So we've learned a lot, I think, you know, and I think we've become
the people. This is our baby.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also, you know, I always find that, like, I tell artists this all the time. The first one is always the hardest. It's like you're learning the process. You're learning who the personnel are going to be. You're seeing personnel coming and going. It's just part of the process. You see, okay, people are, like you said, actors were moving away. Maybe crew were changing. Facilities were changing. And it's like you have all these moving parts. That's why I find it so remarkable that you guys were able to finish it. And it took as long as it did. That's the way and films come through on this show. And it's like your trailer looks amazing. I can tell you that.
I've seen
so many, and they don't all look like that, you know? So it's like you never know what you're going to get. And it's really nice when you see filmmakers or a producer duo like yourselves take the time, like, marinate on it, not get to, I mean, it's easy to get deflated. That's part of the process, too. I think most people take for granted how much artists go through that deflation period, like not feeling like they're part of the universe and that, you know, the world of film or making art. And you have to push through and persevere through that. And that's what you guys have done. And it's tremendous. So, like, the real, like, reward is you finish the movie and now you've got distribution, you got all these things in place. You've got a plan for, you know, 2 and 3. How this process, how you initially thought making films would be, and how you want to make films from this point forward.
I think it's smarter. You know, it's like, you know, you go through kindergarten and elementary school, and by the time you're graduating sixth grade, like, you're not at the same level as you were when you were a preschooler, you know? So right. It's like now we know the mistakes that we've made along the road, or the things that we've done that have made things a little bit harder. And now we know the easier route to do it. And, you know, but it's a process of learning. Like, I don't think you could be a filmmaker and just go in and figure it all out when you're doing things by yourself. You know, those are the people that wind up getting stuck in contracts that, you know, they're not going to ever see a dime on their films that they make. So, you know, I think that's it's just to have the tools now for walking into the next film. We have the tools in place. We know what we have to do first, you know, like Carlos was saying, distribution and financing and, you know, different things, talent and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, but also I have to say a little bit off the subject, we couldn't have done this movie without our crew and the support of our crew. Everybody was just so kind. So many people came in and did so much stuff for free. And so many people were just like, they believed in us. And at the end of the day, you know, they walked away from our film sets going, God, you guys are like a family. Like, wow. The way that we treated our crew and the way that, you know, we were so thankful and grateful for everything that they did, you know, at the end of the day, that made it super special. So a little going for even for these people, you know, because they're banking on you for doing it too.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. It's like I think there's something to be said about when you have a team of people looking for the leadership to like, they're in it with you. And it's like, it puts sometimes more pressure on you guys to lead the parade. You know what I mean? But when you do it and when you put one foot in front of the other, that is the greatest like accomplishment. I mean, people don't really understand how hard it is to do it with a group of five people, let alone how many total people were in your total crew, maybe 50?
Oh yeah. I mean, by the end of it, we had like around 50 to 75 people, and then some of them are uncredited and stuff like that. But I mean, to piggyback, you know, it's a team building exercise. And the thing is, like, you find your team. You know, and I'm always willing to meet new people and see what they're grounded in and stuff like that. But, you know, we met a lot of people along the way. We've met new friends, and God, man, me, Patrick and Ariel. I mean, it's like, who was to say that, you know, that little shitty movie we were doing in Anza became this, you know, and now like we, you know, Patrick and Ariel, we've shot all these little short films while we were doing this. We were doing, you know, films that were getting awards. I mean, at one point we won in a competition that gave us $15,000 for post sound mixing, which we would have gotten for, you know, that would have been $15,000 out of our pockets. But we didn't do that because we did short films, you know, and that made us, it's an exercise. You start to get better. You start to get more efficient. You start to, the shorthand is there, you know, we've learned so much from this whole process. And then it's funny because then you go into other independent films and you try to bring that experience and try to pass it on to other people and help them with their projects, you know, because they came onto your film.
Yeah.
We return that favor, you know, and like Ariel was saying, like, these people were really appreciative. We did pay some people, but other people, we fed them, we housed them. If they needed transportation, if they needed fuel. Well,
the learning ability
to help them, you know.
Yeah.
Again, you know, some people were completely green, never been on a set before, you know, and it's like, but you know, they love working with us, you know, and it's like, I can't wait to work with them again. And it's like, now it becomes fun, you know. It's like, okay, we're on set, we're having a good time, you know, and you know everyone's contributing and stuff like that. So yeah, I
just think it's funny though, once the film is done and then you're like, oh God, I'm never making a film again. And then like 2 weeks later, we're like, we're all sitting at the table. Patrick, Carlos, and I are like, okay, we need to shoot. We got to do something. We got to write something.
We get the itch. Okay, well, why don't we do this? And it's funny. That's how the Restless movie came up. You know, let's do a movie on a phone. It was like no one's doing a movie on a phone. We were doing it like an iPhone 10. No one was doing a movie. Now everyone's doing movies on phones. And we're just like, yeah, sure. And that movie's playing right. Actually, we have a screening next Tuesday.
March 1st at the Chinese Theater.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. That's awesome. That's right by me. You got to send me an info.
Yeah, we'll send you the link.
All right. Well, I'm gonna end the interview with this last question. Sure. Now, what would you tell, after all this process, what would you tell that first year Marine, all that you've learned, what would you tell that person if you went back in time? You said you were watching movies in the theaters to escape. You were figuring out what you wanted to do. What would you tell that person now, having gone through everything you've gone through?
Well, I hope you're listening out there. Our daughter's a U.S. Marine right now.
Oh, wow.
She's over in Pensacola, Florida right now.
Oh, that's awesome. That's where my girlfriend's from. That's great.
Yeah. Wow. So what would I tell the first year Marine that maybe wants to get into film? Is that the question?
Yep. Or just in life, just, you know, empowering information.
Yeah. I mean, I would just say, take everything that the military and the Marines teaches you. Sometimes it makes no sense, but there's always meaning behind it. And, you know, if you can enjoy the process of doing it, because some people go in there and they're like, oh God, I hate this and stuff like that. And it's just like, oh, it's so stressful. But if you can actually take something away from it and learn from it, you're going to know in your heart exactly what path you want to be taking in life. And I think that's what, you know, being a Marine, it gives you direction. It gives you that soul where you have to like think within yourself and figure it out on your own. And, you know, it's not somebody just telling you what to do all the time, even though they do that in the Marines. But and within yourself, you know, you'll find your path, and it will be, you'll have the mentality and the clarity to do the things that you need and want to do.
Great answer. What about you, Carlos?
For me, it's three words: believe in yourself. You know, if you don't believe in yourself, you'll never get shit done. You know, it's like, you know, when everyone's doubting you and all that stuff, to be honest, me personally, I'm my own worst enemy. So I always try to tell myself, believe in yourself. You know, you're making film. You wanted to do this. You're here. You know, yes, it sucks. It's hour 13. You're hungry. You're tired. But you're making movies. And you know what? I'm living a dream now. You know, so that's what it is, living a dream. It feels like a nightmare sometimes, but it's the dream. But just believe in yourself.
I've got a sign in my music room that says, if you're on the right path, it's always uphill. And it's like, it's really the truth, because
I love that.
No one really learns anything when things are easy. That's not what shapes you. It's like going through the trenches of what you do, making this movie. That's what shaped this movie.
Yep.
Drove the narrative and the vision to complete it. And that's what's going to, you know, compel people to want to see more movies and more stories from you guys. Real quick, where can people find your movie, and where can people find you if they want to, you know more about you or hire you for their next film shoot?
Well, we have a website. It's losproductionsinc.com that they can come and check out Carlos and myself. We're also on Facebook platforms and Instagram, and VOD. We're getting our package within a week, so with all of that, if you'd like. But awesome. It should be, you know, it's Apple, Amazon, all those fun places.
Well, we like those places.
Yeah.
Well, Carlos, Oriel, you guys are wonderful guests. You're wonderful artists. We wish you nothing but the best for this movie, Burn. Thank you for being guests on Wake Up Hollywood.
Thank you. You
have an open window to come back for any future movies. I'd love Thank to you. You know, just keep showcasing you guys as artists. That's what this whole vehicle is, to do that. And we've had Oscar-nominated people. We've had beginning artists. Like, the whole point is, let's showcase artists as a community and showcase their careers in as many ways as possible, because that's what it's about. It's about just creating something and making people feel something, because what else in life is there, really, right? If there's one thing the pandemic showed us, it's like the entire world shut down and it was all music, TV, and more important than you ever will know, and just keep creating. Thank you so much for doing what you do. I can't wait to see the movie. Check out Burn April 1st on all platforms. And we'll see you guys next week. On behalf of Carlos, Ariel, myself, and Sam, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. Peace and love, people.
Bye.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.